You are listening to Bridging the Social Distance. My name is Jenny Mitchell, and I recorded this show here at CFRU, Guelph's campus and community radio station, as a means of creating a platform for us to share ideas and feelings and perspectives in the wake of this global pandemic that is COVID-19. I was afraid that people would get isolated or I would lose the opportunity to chat with my community and find out how everyone is doing, so I made this show. If you're listening and you would like to get involved or be interviewed, you can contact me at mobile@cfru.ca. I'd like to provide the disclaimer that these interviews were recorded at different points in time, so situations in some of these locations may have changed. This show is also being syndicated for CIOI in Hamilton, Ontario. Today I'm speaking with Joyce Kelterborn, a resident over at the Village of Riverside Glen Retirement Residence. This interview was originally recorded on July 28th, 2020.
So to start with, can you introduce yourself for listeners?
Yes, my name is Joyce Kelterborn. I was born in Toronto, married at the age of 17. I married a gentleman by the name of Terry Kelterborn, a fellow of German history, a family from Wellesley. A lot of your listeners would know where that is. And we raised two wonderful girls. We now have three granddaughters and a grandson and two great-granddaughters.
That's very exciting.
Yes. All of the children are involved in medical field. I have two granddaughters who are nurses. One is a paramedic. My grandson is a firefighter in Markham. My son-in-law is a retired policeman after 37 years. And my father was a retired policeman. I got a beautiful younger daughter. I say younger. She's 50 plus, who was a 30-year teacher. Special ed. And very, very proud of her. And what else? I've lived in Georgetown, Acton area for the last 20 years and just got physically unable to care for myself properly. Needed a wheelchair and had to give up my house and my car and that's how I ended up here with my little pal beside me. Bryce is so small compared to me. Anyway, I have only been here. I was in Georgetown Hospital for 4 months, and I've been here since March.
Wow.
I'm now beginning to feel at home and getting to know people, and I've made some very good friends. And these folks were really good to me in June on my 80th birthday. Had a cake and had a real good time, even though my daughter and family couldn't be part of it because of this silly virus.
Yeah.
But they did get a kick out of the t-shirt she bought me because it said Quarantine Queen on the front of my t-shirt. I think you got a picture of it.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah. Anyway, that's me. My husband was with Loblaws for 40 years. Myself, I was with the Catholic Children's Aid for 18 years. I'm very content, except for the fact that I can't hug and kiss my family the way I would like to.
So what time in March, like, did you move right in the middle of the beginning of the quarantine?
Right pretty much at the beginning. I ushered it in.
Oh, you were living in your house before that? Like it was...
In Acton.
In Acton, okay.
I had a little bungalow townhouse. They have six in a row. We owned the property. It was a little two-bedroom bungalow. We added a third bedroom and a bathroom to it, but we really loved it. And I would have stayed there if I could have seen a way, or if my daughter could have seen a way to keep me there. But it was an expensive proposition to get somebody to live with you or to come in. I needed somebody at night. Mm-hmm. And it started out with the water retention, the swelling of the legs, and they were leaking so badly that my carpets in my living room were soaking wet.
Wow.
And it just got to the point where I couldn't get in my car because my legs were so swollen. So it was, a matter of the worst coming. And my daughter could see it and I couldn't. Her and I argued a lot simply because she was wanting the best for me and I didn't want to let go.
Yeah, that sounds really hard. Every time I meet somebody in one of the retirement centers who, you know, when family had to weigh in, it sounds extremely challenging to have those conversations. And I don't know, she can't know what it's like to be you, but also has the, I'm sure the best, I don't know, it seems really hard.
Yeah, with my mom and dad, unfortunately, my dad passed away on the 1st of January and my mother died 2 days before my birthday in June. My mother spent a lot of time with us during that period, but she had bad health and she had cancer and died in the June. So I didn't have that, you know, having to do something or put them in a home because they were in their own home. So it was just a matter of, after some length of time, selling it.
Yeah. I guess it's a hard question to ask, but when you move before, it's an emergency, like, is there a chance that you could maybe transition more comfortably? Like, is this maybe a really good time to move before there is sort of an incident or something, I guess, that makes it more urgent?
I would think I would have found it a lot easier if I had have chosen to do it.
Yeah.
As it was, I had to do it because there was just nobody there, nobody to look after me. My grandson and his wife and the children live out in Kitchener. My daughter's husband is still working and she had just retired and she was doing supply. So there was nobody to really provide what I needed. She was very good. She would take me to get groceries and then I would sit in the car and she would go in and get me, and she's still doing it. I have a list to give her of groceries to bring here for me. So just getting back to my career at the Children's Aid, I started just as a secretary, they're an important part. Started as a secretary and then worked my way up to secretary to the head of the adoption and foster home department. And then had the gentleman that was in charge of data processing approach me and say that because of the 15 years that I had been with the agency, I had gained a lot of knowledge about the agency. And would I take on the department head in data processing? And I said to him, you know, like, I know absolutely nothing about computers, as do I knew now. I don't know much about them. And he said that didn't matter. My knowledge of the agency was more important, that I would learn the computer end of it as time went by. And as it is now, I kept saying, I don't want a computer. I don't want a computer. My daughter bought me, for my 80th birthday, bought me, she calls it a box. There's pictures run through it all the time.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
It holds, I think she said it holds 700 pictures. And then she bought me the screen. So like you and I can talk to my grandchildren and they can talk to me.
That's neat. So
she got me in the back door, so to speak. As for my time here, for a long time, I kept saying, I hate it, because it certainly wasn't home for a long time. Mm-hmm. But now I'm beginning to integrate into the community here. Bryce and the staff here are absolutely incredible. And I've made some good friends and found a couple of ladies that like the same things I do, the knitting and the crocheting and the rest of it. And I'm quite enjoying it now, settling in well. It's not as big as I would like, but I think that's typical. When you get into a residence or a private dwelling, that it's not what you had.
Yeah.
It's not maybe what you want, but it's what you have to put up with in order to survive. Yeah. The only thing I really would like to have is a little pup.
Yeah.
I know we can't have them here, so I've got my little girl, painting of my little girl up on the wall. I can sit here and look at her. They believe she's here with me.
You could, I know cats aren't the same as dogs, but some people have cats, I've learned.
Yeah, no, absolutely not. I would sneeze just looking at it.
Oh, yeah, fair enough.
No, I wouldn't want a cat. But an interesting little story, the oldest great-granddaughter will be 4 in November, and they just had to put their dog down not too awfully long ago. And my grandson handled it, I thought, beautifully. And this is how it affected me, in that he kept saying to her on the Monday, if Ginny's not well enough when I take her to the doctor, we may have to leave her there. And this went on all week till the Friday. And on the Friday, she went to sleep, or when she went to bed in the afternoon, Christian said to her, well, Daddy's got to take Ginny to the doctor today, and we may not be bringing her home. Well, the intention was not to bring her home that day. Anyway, he got home, and she was just waking up, and he said to her, I had to leave Ginny with the doctor. Well, she started to cry, and she was absolutely brokenhearted. A little while later, she came down the stairs with Ginny's leash around her neck. She was going to be Ginny for the day. And I thought that was rather cute. It showed how much she thought of Ginny, but that she had accepted what was happening, you know? Yeah. So anyway, they're two very special little girls. I just adore them. And it's been such a long time, it seems, since we've been family.
Yeah. And especially now, I think you guys are even a little bit more quarantined, right? You have to stay in your rooms right now?
Yes. If the health department agrees, we may get out of quarantine on Friday.
Okay.
Yeah. Thursday's the 14th day, so I imagine that they would want that day to end before they let us go. I could just see, you could just imagine the stampede of people getting out of their rooms. Like, you look down the hall and you don't see anybody at any either end. You may see, one of the special workers walking up, just checking on things, but just in general, you don't see anybody. And that, I mean, there's always somebody going up and down and around the television on, or,
yeah,
you know, and it's just, well, it's strange.
Mm-hmm.
And I experienced the same thing in that I was in Georgetown Hospital from September till March, or no, October to March. Wow. And I think I was in there a couple of weeks when I got that D. difficile. Okay. And I was under quarantine for 4 weeks.
Oh.
Then I got out of quarantine, and I was out of quarantine for a week, and I got it again. And I was another 2 weeks in quarantine. So I've sort of got used to being in quarantine now, and I keep my knitting right beside me.
Yeah, right.
Between the knitting and writing letters and paying bills and whatnot. You can keep yourself pretty busy.
Keeping paying bills as a way of passing the time seems a little bit depressing. I was doing it too, though. I got really on top of paying my bills.
Yeah. Yeah, it makes a difference. And I cleaned up a bit in here today, but usually I have a pile here to go through, a pile here to go through, and a pile somewhere else to go through. And then Brenda, who's our minister here, she's been bringing little word searches and that kind of thing for us to fill in the time. And so I have the church pile, and I have this pile and that pile and the other pile. But yeah, I can't think of anything other than, you know, how we spend our recreation time. And that was either cottaging or camping, trailering. We spent a lot of time up in the Kawarthas, Peterborough, Buckhorn area. Our grandson would be with us pretty much every summer. And we had a lovely cottage up north, and we just couldn't keep it because, as I said, Terry was diabetic and the property was rather landscaped, highly landscaped, and he just couldn't get the lawnmower up and down. And our son-in-law's parents had a place at Barry, so he had the two places to handle. So we got rid of the cottage, and that was, we didn't do anything for a while. And then we went up to Buckhorn and to see some friends, and they had a trailer, there was a trailer up there for sale. And we decided maybe that was a good idea because it wasn't too big for him. It just had a big rock garden for me. So that kept me busy. But we spent about 13 or 14 years up there.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, yeah. And a few of the people are still there. And Christian my grandson inquired about the possibility that he may be able to get the same lot. And when he went up there, he found out that the fellow that owns it now was a firefighter, so there's a commonality there.
Oh, neat.
Yeah, but he, I think he realized that with two little kids, he'd probably be better off with a cottage.
Yeah.
Than, you know, a trailer with a smaller area. But, yeah, so that was how we spent our summers, was cottaging and camping.
Does this time of year remind you of it? Like, do you get little waves where the weather comes through and memories come back?
I hung in there after Terry passed away for a couple of years. But it was going up by myself and having to lug the groceries, because I have rheumatoid arthritis as well. and lugging the groceries and the dog and the trip up by yourself, just driving in the car that distance by yourself. But yeah, this time of year I do. As a matter of fact, my daughter has said they have just sold their house and they bought one over Cambridge Way. And they've said with the extra money they made selling their house that they were thinking about buying a cottage or you know, that type of thing. So they would have some place to go to. Right now they have a beautiful big swimming pool. And my granddaughter's going to be horribly disappointed that there's no pool for her to go to because she loves swimming.
Yeah.
That will be sorely missed, that pool, for sure. They really liked it. My daughter's a real entertainer. And they have a little fire pit and they have fire. And of course, the granddaughter looks forward to the s'mores, you know, and having a late night swim. She thinks that's neat. Only being three, that's really neat when she can go out in the dark and swim. Family-wise, my oldest girl lives in Etobicoke. Mm-hmm. One of them is up in East Gwillimbury, and another one of my granddaughters lives in Etobicoke. And the oldest one at the moment, the last I heard, she was in Nicaragua.
Wow.
Her and her husband bought a place down there. Now, whether they're still there or not, I don't know. We don't hear too much from them from down there. The mail delivery isn't very efficient. Yeah, and as I said, Christian lives in Kitchener. He keeps very busy, what with his firefighting and whatnot. And my granddaughter-in-law has applied for a job in Kitchener, so I hope she gets some. I think she was having an interview today, and my daughter's a little bit excited because the 7 days a month that Christian is working, she might be able to babysit. So yeah, she's Grammy. She's very special. The little one, the three-year-old, was very worried that because Grammy's house was for sale, she couldn't have her sleepovers. She thought they would be canceled because the house was being sold. And Brenda had to explain to her that no, that they still would have their sleepovers even though Grammy wouldn't be in that particular house. She would be in another house. So that was okay. She was a little concerned too. She thought maybe she should take all of her toys from Brenda's house home to her house, so that nobody else would get them or they wouldn't get lost. It's funny how they think.
Yeah.
Three years of age and she had figured out that, you know, her toys could go somewhere else. She was more worried about that. Yesterday when I was talking to her, I told her I had made her a toque for the winter and it had purple in it, which is her favorite color. She said, "Oh, good, Nana." She says, "I have a red one, but now I have a new one." She was counting the one I made her as a new one. So I have to put a purple pom-pom on it to make her happy. Everything's got to be purple.
Yeah.
Yesterday at supper, Brenda was saying that she took her dress off because it was a new dress and she didn't want to sit and eat her supper with this new dress on. So she took it off. The 15-month-old put it on over top of her dress. And the 15-month-old doesn't talk too much yet. But every time Evan Lee, the older one, hangs up the phone, she always says, "I love you, Nana." So she did that. And we hear back in the background, "Oh, I love you, Nana." The little one was trying to say, "I love you, Nana," too.
That's so sweet.
Oh, they are. They're beautiful, beautiful girls. They really are. The oldest one has got eyes that you wouldn't believe. They are just gorgeous. They're both beautiful, beautiful girls, well-behaved, parents are really super. Parker, the youngest one, is just she's just starting to come out of herself, and she's getting developing a personality of her own. Mm-hmm. Where the older one, Evan Lee, she's 3 going on 13. She knows all about the continents and the alphabet and jet stream and, you know, the whole bit. Is, you know, she's just so curious, and she just, I don't know what it is. The teacher at school said, we certainly aren't worried about her. And she's 3 and they want to put her in full-time school in September. So,
wow.
Yeah, she's a smart little cookie. Alphabets and the whole bit, you know. She's loving. She loves to read. She'll get on this Facebook thing with me, and I'm reading to her. Then she hangs up for me after I've read or talked about books. And then she'll phone my daughter, and she'll have her read 5 books. And Christian tells me that before the baby came along, he'd say, and before she went to school, he would read to her all day long.
Wow.
I said, you know, like, how many books? So he said, 10, 12, you know, no problem. They're very, very, very good parents. Very good parents.
You're listening to Bridging the Social Distance, a show recorded here in Guelph at CFRU as a platform for sharing stories and perspectives during the global pandemic of COVID-19. This show is also being syndicated for CIOI in Hamilton, Ontario. Today I'm speaking with Joyce Kelterborn, a resident over at the Village of Riverside Glen Retirement Residence.
It must be so neat to get to watch like several generations come from your lineage, you know? Like I'm a mom, but my kids are still little, so I haven't obviously experienced any of the sort of ripple effect of when my kids have kids and that kind of thing. But for you to get to see that several times over, it just seems so magical.
Yeah. Like I've got a picture of the 4 generations, and I look at it and I think, oh my goodness, you know, it's hard to believe that. And you see, like you say, you see them, my daughter retiring, and the little one going into full-time school, the little one's 15 months old, and it just, and when I think about my grandson, my pride and joy, a firefighter, saving people's lives, and it's something he wanted. He first got his degree in massage therapy, and he worked at that for a while. Prior to that, he was he managed the Gellert Pool in Georgetown, and he wasn't happy with massage therapy. It really wasn't what he thought it was going to be, I guess. And then he started investigating firefighting. He talked about it on and off for a long time. And then he took a couple of courses, and of course they had to pay a fee every time they wrote their whatever it is they had to do. And then he went to the school out in Edmonton area, and he was in school out there for a month or so, maybe longer. And then he came back and waited and waited and kept applying to different ones. And I was at my daughter's house when he got the phone call that they wanted to see him. And oh, the smile on his face, he was just in seventh heaven. He was so happy, and we were so proud. Now he's waiting take a course or write a paper to be a fire captain.
Wow.
And he's been 7 years, I guess, now. But I'm telling you, very, very proud of him. I'm proud of the gals that work in the hospitals too, because the middle one, she's working with COVID sickness, and the younger one worked with heart transplant babies. And
wow,
you know, it's just not a job that everybody can really do. It just, people are so grateful, and it's funny, this one little girl, I guess she worked with the little girl for some length of time. And she, as I say, quit her job to take this other job. And 2 days after she left sick kids, the little girl died. And she felt so badly. She said to her mom, "I wonder if I had stayed, if she would have lived longer." And my daughter said, Don't think of it that way. Just think of it that she lived as long as she did because of the care you were giving her, you know. Mm-hmm. So, but so many of the heart transplants and heart patients don't live, you know. And I think to myself how lucky we are that we've got, you know, that we had two healthy girls. Mind you, my younger one would appreciate this, but she's diabetic. And the older girl has had about 3 or 4 bouts with cancer. Skin cancer. She just had major nose surgery. And her comment was, "Do you think someday I might look like the Kardashians?" No. Anyway. She's still, they're both beautiful girls. They're both have their own way. Brenda's very outgoing, and Barbara would be a bit, I would think, you know, she probably wouldn't like me saying that, but she's on the shy side and rather quiet, where Brenda likes party, has family around her all the time. Her husband's one of 19 children.
Wow.
So when they have family parties, they really are family parties. There are 18 of them still alive, and his mother is still alive. Wow. She's in her late 80s, and she always tells the story that the last two kids were twins, and when they came in pairs, she quit. She didn't want any more when they started coming in pairs. But they're very together family. The girls are, 2 or 3 of the girls are nurses down around Kitchener. Some of the sisters are nurses out east. They live in, they live near Big Pond, where Rita McNeil had her restaurant and did a lot of her music. And the grandmother, they still have the grandmother's house. 3 or 4 of them bought it together so that they could go from here and use that as a summer.
Oh, neat. Lodge.
Yeah, it was a really neat idea.
Yeah.
In fact, I think one of the other brothers had approached my son-in-law that maybe they should, there was another one for sale that they knew about, that maybe they should do that, and they could each have their turn in the summer down there. apparently it's a beautiful spot. It's right on the ocean and the salt water and the whole bit, and lots of scenery to see. And his brother is very involved in one of the armed services, and it's like a museum kind of thing. Yeah, it's funny, when we were talking about coming and talking with you, I thought, well, what am I going to say? And really, I've had a lot to say, but something I haven't shared is the fact that I still have relatives in England.
Oh.
And my father was in the First World War, and he was one of the men at the palace who wore the big, tall, black hat and the red jacket and the whole bit.
Wow.
And he was a very interesting man. And now I have a cousin who is going to be presented to the Queen at the end of the year, providing this virus is over. He's won an award for his contribution to transportation in Britain. He has his own company, umpteen dozen trucks and cars and whatnot, and he transports boats and cars and goods, and he also has the contract for one of the music groups to transport their equipment to their various performance places. So he's quite an interesting young man, in that he was born with no legs, and he's made his mark in Britain. And we're also proud of him. I mean, it's a genetic disease that he has. His father had it, and his daughter was born with one leg quite a bit shorter than the other. And I was born with mild spina bifida. So it's something it's a genetic thing in our family. And, you know, it seems like nothing to me, but people seem very interested in knowing about it. And he just recently remarried, and he periodically calls me, and it's really cute because he's, "Hi, darling." And he sent me a beautiful box of cookies from the Buckingham Palace for Christmas.
Wow.
Yeah. And I was talking to him, and I told him that Evan Lee was learning about the Queen and the palace and whatnot. She had seen something on television. So I got a phone call from him the other day. He sent her a parcel. I haven't got it yet, but I don't know what, and I don't know what's in it, but she's getting a parcel from Britain anyway.
How about that?
With 3-year-old will probably please her. So, yeah.
I'm so impressed by how thorough you're able to keep track of all of these people. You know, it's amazing. It's like you have two daughters, but then there's just this like spiraling out of a massive family, you know, when they marry into family, and then the family your parents had, and but you've kept track of so many of these people.
And I'm an only child.
Do you think that's why? Do you think that's why, like, you do such an amazing job keeping track, is because when you were young?
I think so, and it's funny because here in the retirement home, we have two or three different groups, you know, about your day-to-day or about your history or about something, and I always seem to get involved in them, and I'm amazed at how interested people are in knowing your past history.
Mm-hmm.
Like this cousin of mine in England that I referred to, Malcolm, I've got 24 first cousins in England, or I had.
Yeah.
Most of them are dead now because they were in their 70s and 80s and 90s because my father was 44 when I was born, so they were always much older than me. There's 5 of us still, and 3 of us that keep in contact all the time. But yeah, when I said 24 first cousins, it was funny. I took Brenda over to England for her 18th birthday. And I think 8 of the cousins had birthday parties for her. Wow. She had 8 birthday cakes. And yeah, we were able to visit a number of them and stay with them. And she developed a relationship with this Malcolm fellow that I was telling you about. And her and him, they were just like brothers and sisters. He took her in his big 18-wheel lorry all over London and showed her the Queen's Laundry and the whole bit. He's quite a character, quite a colorful character.
What I like about your descriptions, I keep finding myself sort of teleported to the different places you're describing. And it's neat to think, especially during quarantine when we can't really go anywhere. Right. The idea of these extensions of ourselves, these family members in different places continuing on and having their own adventures that kind of are like connected to us too. Like, yeah. It's sort of a way of getting out of the space you're in to all of these different places through these different people you're connected to. And it's a really beautiful thing to think about when you yourself, for the time being, don't really get to wander too far, you know?
Yeah, and you know, there are memories that I don't know how people can forget. I know people lose their memories as they get older, but I'm 80 and I can still picture these people as they were then.
Yeah.
You know, and it was a cousin of my father's and his wife we went and stayed at their place in Yorkshire, and they took us by train to Edinburgh, and we spent time in Edinburgh, and it just, you know, in the cat, I know my daughter was sick. She had a bit of stomach flu, but just to see Edinburgh Castle and all that thing, you don't forget it.
Yeah.
You can't, I mean, how anybody could, like, I know physically sometimes your brain doesn't always stay with you, but hopefully mine will. It has so far. I think I'm about the youngest person here in a retirement home.
Yeah, I suppose you're on the younger side. I guess because I've talked to so many different residents, and it seems kind of like different people are given different gifts and different trade-offs. Like, some people, their body starts to go in ways that isn't ideal, but they have the most vivid memories and can just tell a story for, you know, indefinitely. And it's amazing that other people, the memories aren't great, but they're still very independent. And so it's really just kind of a mix. Like, it's incredible to me that I'll talk to someone who's 80 and then a different day I'm talking to someone who's 100. And sometimes there's similarities, and then in other ways, obviously very different. But yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, I've had people look at me and they can't believe that I have so much physically wrong. Mm. And yet my memory is Mind you, I have a problem with names.
Oh, yeah, that's fair.
I have to write them down. And even this morning, Lynn was in here for a little while, and I was showing her some pictures. And she went down the hall, and I wanted to show her something else. And do you think I could think of her name? No way. I had to ask one of the other girls, what is her name, please?
Oh my gosh, yeah. Well, I've always been bad with names, and I'm only in my 30s, and so I can't even imagine what it will be like when I've, you know, met hundreds more people too between now and whenever that is. But oh my gosh. Yeah. But how could you, when you have 24 first cousins, names have to go at some point.
You know, I sat down one day and I tried to write all the names down. And I would say I had 2/3 of them that I could remember. I mean, some of them I hadn't had any contact with over the years, but you know, I could, and if I really try hard, I can picture what they look like when I visited them, you know. But and then like Donald having 19 brothers and sisters, that to me just I just can't imagine.
No,
but I think it's a case of like with larger families like that, the oldest looking after the younger.
Yeah.
You know, like, here, you take them.
I just picture your daughter having the responsibility of trying to remember all those names. She marries into that family, and every one of them would want to be just as important as the other, you know?
She has a good relationship with a lot of them, too.
Yeah.
She's very fond of them. She's very fond of them. But when they have a family party at her house, like, it's nothing for her to have 60 people at the house. I mean, I guess 5 or 6 of them. See, there's 2 of them live close to Georgetown, and the rest are in Kitchener. So they're very quite close. And then some of their kids have got kids and more kids. And not very often do they have the out-of-towners come. They come and stay at the farm or stay with them, but only maybe 1 or 2 at a time. You know, thank goodness.
But she's the social one, right? She's the one that kind of loves it?
Yeah. Yeah,
she'd have to be.
Yeah, she likes having the family all around. Like, it's nothing for her to say to the kids, you know, come on up, spend the day and do the pool, and she'll feed them. And, you know, she never asks you to bring any food or anything. It's always laid on for you, your homemade soups and the whole bit.
Wow.
She's a good cook, too. So,
but she didn't move too far, right? When she sold her house, she's just coming to Cambridge?
She lives in Rockwood.
Rockwood, okay.
And they've moved, is it Helmsley or Helms, just north of Cambridge?
Hespler, maybe?
Hespler, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
And she said it wasn't until they went and looked at a house there that she realized that her and Donald were not city folk, that they really were country folk, even though, you know, as a youngster, we lived in Toronto. We moved out to Georgetown when she was newly married. So I guess, you know, since then, 20, 30 years, we've lived in the country. And so they bought a townhouse. It won't be ready for a while, so they're staying in a rented bungalow that belongs to her sister-in-law. So it's still within the family and still not too far away. Mm-hmm. They have a farm, so it's a nice big house, and they can visit So,
What are you most looking forward to when the quarantine type measures lift?
Getting outside.
Yeah.
On the sidewalk, not out on the deck.
Yeah.
But downstairs on the sidewalk and being able to walk that path over toward the water and, you know, and then and having the kids there.
Yeah.
And also the some of the folks, my friend Marlene has told me about the park across the street here.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a playground and everything there. And I'm just so looking forward to seeing it and taking the kids there.
Yeah.
And having a picnic.
Yeah. So did you not really get to see too much of this
nothing.
At all, right?
Nothing. No. I came right from the hospital in Georgetown right to the door here.
How did they choose Guelph?
Well, my daughter did an awful lot of searching.
Yeah.
To find a place, number one, that I could afford, mm-hmm. and that was within certain distances, like she
yeah.
didn't want me to be too far from Kitchener, and because of Christian, and she looked at places in Kitchener and all over, you know. Mainly, she wanted me to be comfortable. She wanted me to have a little space. But I think the most important part, I think, for anyone in them is cost.
Yeah.
The cost is as absorbent as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah.
For anybody, unless they were rich and didn't give a damn. But then they probably own their own home and have servants.
Well, I was going to say, especially when you have to pay a lot of money and you don't even, you know, want to be there. But
oh. Yeah.
But yeah. I do know, in terms of, like, the part of Guelph that you're in, there are some beautiful things. Like, when you do get to leave the building again, you're also right across the street from the Evergreen Senior Center. And there's so many activities over there. So I know a lot of people go back and forth between the two, and especially knitting. They have a whole shop full of knitted things that people make and donate. So I've bought like all of my children's hats and mitts and scarves from the little shop at the Evergreen Senior Center.
I could have knit them for you.
Yeah.
I knit them for my little grandchildren, and my granddaughter-in-law has put them on them, but I've never been in their presence when they've had them on,
yeah.
except one sweater. Yeah, the others, they, you know, they obviously put them on her, but I never saw, I wasn't there when it happened.
Yeah.
The one thing I did make her was a quilt.
Oh, nice.
I crocheted her granny square quilt.
Yeah.
And she loved it. She had it on her bed. And as a matter of fact, I have right here beside me, I have a bag with the wool in it to make the younger girl one too. My grandson said to me, well, you know that quilt you made for Evelyn? And I said, Jesus, are you going to make one for Parker too? And so Parker's going to get hers too.
Oh, that's awesome. And when you're done those two, you can help Marlene make the ones for hospice. Because there's a yeah. whole knitting club that does that too, right?
Yeah, I've got a few things. I made hair bands with the flowers on.
Oh yeah, nice.
So I've got a half a dozen of them to give her, and any things I make that I'll make and give them to her.
Yeah, I mean, it's when you were describing how when you first arrived, you didn't want to be there, and we're saying that you don't want to be there. I love that some of the people living there work so hard to make friends anyway. Like, they know, they must remember themselves how hard it can be to arrive. And,
yeah.
you know, and so they don't, they just extend such like an wonderful gesture of friendship when they see someone come in, even someone who's not happy, and they're like, I'm going to be friends with them anyway. And
I would stand in the middle of the room. I hate it. But Marlene has had a big influence on my attitude because of her likes of the things that I like. Mm-hmm. And the volunteer, contributions to different things. And then we do the exercise program. There's a few of us that, I can think of Eileen, and she's got a tremendous sense of humor, and there's a few other ones, and Catherine and Barb, and there's a few of us sit together pretty much every day, and we have laughs and we talk when we should be doing exercises. But Carly's very good. She's very patient with us. So, but they're a good group. There are a few that, that don't talk, that don't participate. And I sort of, I don't mean to pat myself on the back, but I try to talk to them even though they don't talk back.
Yeah.
There was one lady that we had at my table when she first came, and now she barely talks, and she sometimes doesn't recognize me. But I talked to her, and she's right in the room next door, and she'll yell, "Help! Help! Help!" I'll go and I stand at the door and I, "What do you want help with now?" Nothing. That's all she wanted, was just to know somebody was there.
Yeah.
So, and there's, a few people that they just don't talk. But if you just say good morning or hello or something, you sometimes get a smile on their face. And I've got a couple of people now that I'm teaching how to knit. So a couple of the staff want to learn to knit. So
it seems like a great quarantine activity.
It is. And I only started doing it this last week or two, because I had put it away for, I don't know whether I thought I was punishing it or not, but I realized that I need it because of the rheumatoid arthritis, I need to keep my hands moving. Mm-hmm. And maybe within the next few weeks, I'll get back on my walker, and I can walk with the walker, but they won't let me walk unless the wheelchair's behind me in case I fall or slip or need to sit down. Mm-hmm. But I'm hoping that, because my granddaughter said to me, "Nanny, I want you to walk so we can hold hands." And that's what I want too.
Aw. Well, I guess we need to wrap up because it's been an hour, but that's a very sweet sentiment to leave on. Yeah. Something to work towards.
And I've enjoyed sharing with you.
I've enjoyed it very much too. And I'm really looking forward when the quarantines lift and you're allowed to have outside visitors again. I'm going to come over to the space and I get to meet so many people in person that I got to meet over the screen during this time. So it'll be really lovely.
Great. That's great. I've enjoyed it too.
So once again, that was Joyce Kelterborn, a resident over at the Village of Riverside Glen Retirement Residence. That brings us to the end of this episode of Bridging the Social Distance, a show produced at CFRU in Guelph and syndicated for CIOI in Hamilton, Ontario, that aims to create a platform for us sharing what we are doing to get through this time together in the wake of COVID-19.